Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, and today I'm joined by the wonderful and glorious Miss Saragon. Sara, how are you?
I'm well. I just think, you know, I'm a bit worried that I'm getting to deal with a really weird subject.
Yes, we'll get to that on the last one. The still cameraless Mr. Marius Ruert. Marius, how are you, and how is your camera repair going?
My camera repair is not going anywhere for reasons that will remain unnamed. I'm sure my colleagues will probably be able to work out why. And just before our anti-cricket reign of terror, Nick Lorimer, I just want to say well done to the New Zealand cricket team who won the first World Test Championship. At least India, Australia, New Zealand, oh, England didn't win. Thank you.
Yeah, no, it's always nice when someone who isn't one of the boring ones, I hate it when the sport gets captured by like one person or one team.
In the 11 of New Zealand, four of the guys were born in Southern Africa. Three in South Africa and one in Zimbabwe. So, a few.
So the joint New Zealand-South African team is what you're saying. Interesting. Anyway, let us get into the news of today. And this is, I think, a good story to start off with. So anyone who's been following the EFF over the past couple of months and past couple of years in particular will notice that they've really been ramping up their sort of almost gang-like aggressive tactics and ploys. Most famously, of course, they attacked Clicks for an allegedly racist ad, although in context it seems that it almost certainly was not racist. They have repeatedly all over the country gotten involved in various labor disputes. I know there was a business near where I live where they actually basically organized a strike amongst some of the workers there. And they've just generally made labor relations and interactions between people and businesses in South Africa worse everywhere. A while ago, they turned their attention towards Gordon Road Spa in Roodepoort in Gauteng. Got into a fight basically with the management there. The management said that they had no place to be involved in this dispute because it was ultimately between them and the workers, and that since the EFF is not a registered trade union, they should go away. They took them to court, and the management has managed to win with the Labour Court ruling that the EFF is not a registered trade union and has no place to get involved in workplace disputes. I think there's probably a case, though, for them to go a little bit further than simply getting the EFF pushed out of these discussions, because according to management, their employees were threatened, their customers were threatened, their management were threatened, and the EFF repeatedly said they were going to, quote, burn the store down. This was all allegedly sparked by a demotion of an employee from floor manager to cashier. So, I think it's good news that the court has ruled against the EFF here. Sara, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, it seems like there's a downward trend, judicially speaking, because I think a day or two ago, a claim against someone, I can't now remember the details, by the EFF for defamation was thrown out or failed or whichever. So the EFF is, it's really looking at sort of, it looks a bit like, it's teetering, if not quite on its last legs, because it's getting involved itself in things that are A, outside its remit, and B, there's nothing but thuggishness coming out of it. There's no quick repartee or explanations that draw on some level of articulacy. It's just plain thuggish. It's desperation, and to pick out, you know, grocery stores and the like. I mean, that's really low pickings for a political party that has ambitions. Although I think the ambitions are likely to be thwarted by allegations of involvement in the VBS scandal. So maybe it's just sort of lowering its sights and trying to get on board. But labor disputes have a whole sort of What can I say? You know, the rules regarding how you deal with labor disputes, what trade unions have to comply with, et cetera, et cetera. And the EFF really, really does not have a place in that, because the whole idea of the legislation is to resolve disputes as much as possible by negotiation and mediation, not by intimidation, burning, and thuggery.
Indeed. And I think this case is an excellent example of a tactic the EFF engages in all the time, which is, I think, on the internet commonly referred to as gaslighting. That is where you convince someone that despite all of the evidence and experience that they have of something, that they are, in fact, crazy and completely mistaken.
Nick, that's not what gaslighting is. That's not what gaslighting is.
That is what gaslighting is.
Yeah, I know. I'm gaslighting you.
Three-year-olds, man.
Very well done, sir. So in their representations to the court, the EFF said, despite all of their rhetoric that clearly was aligning with the actions of the protesters here, that none of the protesters and people who had been involved with violent incidents relating to the spa here, sorry, I think I said spa earlier, I meant spa, that none of these incidents involving the protesters were their members, because they said anyone can buy our stuff. And we're not liable for the conduct of these protesters. We have no knowledge of what happened, and we can't be held liable for members who act on a frolic of its own, is what the legal representative said. You have a legal background, not the strongest argument I've ever heard, I must say.
The thing is that it's definitely a tactic of the EFF, saying, you know, it's recalcitrant trade unions everywhere. So it wasn't our members, it was some outside force or blah, 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 blah. The point is that, you know, it's on any given day, you do not find the EFF outside the spa in Redeport or anywhere else. So it's fairly unlikely that it's just not involved them. I mean, the very saying it doesn't means they were involved.
Right. But Marius, my question to you is, I have a feeling like the authorities and the government would be perhaps a bit quicker off the mark here to be involved. I mean, it's noticeable that the police don't seem to feature too much in the story, despite some of the allegations that have been made here. That if the DA tried a similar thing, things might be a little bit different. Am I crazy to think that, Boris?
No, I don't think so. But also, I mean, the DA would never try to do anything like this. The EFF is, I mean, it's shown itself to be a party that's not interested in, living in a peaceful society. It's shown that the way it wants to do things is through violence and intimidation. I'm pretty sure the EFF has no real interest in a representative democracy. Parliament is something they participate in. They don't really think the institution itself is very important. And, I mean, there's the list of times where Julius Malema and the EFF have intimidated people and acted in an unacceptable fashion, I mean, it's endless. I mean, there were just today, there's an article in the Daily Maverick where the EFF, they now want the South African Health Products Regulatory Agency to approve the vaccines, the COVID vaccines from China and Russia, Sputnik and CoronaVac, the Chinese one's called. So they want to go march on Sapra. They said they're going to do a sleep-in at the house of the CEO, Boitumelo Tshumetso Makokotlela. They've also apparently sent threatening messages on WhatsApp and so on to female employees of Sapra. And it's just, I mean, it's unacceptable. That's not how you function in a democracy and, what's the word I'm looking for? A mature society. And, I mean, this isn't new. It's always... I think it's so funny when journalists say, oh no, Julius Malema is saying these horrible things. He's been, since he came onto the public eye, he's been saying these things. People act so shocked when he says horrible things about journalists and, you know, he'll attack journalists. In 2010 or 2009, whenever it was, about 10 years ago now, he attacked Jonah Fisher, I think the guy's name is a BBC journalist at Rutuli House. Before the EFF was even a twinkle in Julius Malema's eye, he was still in the youth league. And let's not forget, in 2016, Julius Malema said, the EFF is prepared to take up arms against the ANC government, in which the EFF is allowed to operate freely. You can maybe talk about some of the issues of South African democracy, but in South Africa, you can start a political party. There might be some intimidation down here, but I mean, for all intents and purposes, there's freedom of association. You can start a political party. You can join a political party. If you want to overthrow the ANC, the way you do it is at the ballot box. You don't take up arms. I am 100% no fan of the ANC. But they are the legitimate government of this country, and nobody should not be talking about taking up arms to overthrow the ANC or the ANC-led government. And just, this is just another thing. It boggles my mind that anybody thinks that Julius Malema, the EFF, has anything positive to add to this country.
Yeah, no, exactly. They are very much a toxic presence in our politics. And I know from MPs I've talked to that ever since they entered Parliament, the level of just racial vitriol that's overtaken Parliament has been massively increased. And I think it's very important for ordinary South Africans who our polls show, by and large, don't really agree with the EFF on a lot of their points. Need to stand up to them when this intimidation and this thuggery happens, when these violent, nasty pieces of rhetoric are spewed forth. I think, you know, I think that it would probably be a good idea even maybe for people to counter protest when the EFF is intimidating people and just say, you know, we have a right to protest in this country, but when you're being violent, you violate that right.
Exactly.
Sarah, any final thoughts?
Just one on the media, because it's one that bugged me from the get-go when he was the head of the ANCYL, the Youth League. He's the way he conducted elective conferences was beyond despicable. But I remember as he started to get into the media public eye, and he was ranting about things that had nothing to do with policy, ANC or otherwise, and I thought, well, this guy has nothing to say about what matters here. Why are they giving him so much airtime? And I think that the media, I don't know whether it's gullible or desperate, but they carried on following and giving him the airtime that he just didn't deserve, other than the extraordinary antics that he was capable of.
You know, it's the political equivalent of clickbait. You've got to keep saying crazier and crazier things for people to come to you. I mean, let's remember last year when we were coming out of level 5 lockdown, Julius Malema said, Cyril Ramaphosa is going to cause a genocide of the South African people by relaxing lockdown rules. And what has Julius Malema said now when there's talk of lockdown rules being made stricter? They will ignore all the lockdown rules, and, you know, it's not something, you know, we shouldn't be locked down, which is fine. I actually agree with Julius Malema there. But, I mean, the guy's changed his tune from a year ago. I mean, the guy has never found an idea that he doesn't like or won't, you know, spit out. Like, he has no consistency. And, you know, people obviously are free to vote for him, but, I mean, I don't know why he would.
Yeah, no, he is, like all fascists, he's not very good at being consistent.
No.
Anyway.
And fascists also do not like reality.
Yes. Let's move on to our next story for today. Yeah. Of course, we follow up that good news story with another good news story, which is that former finance minister Trevor Manuel, who, as our CEO Frans Grenier likes to remind us, managed to run a budget surplus in South Africa when we had large amounts of economic growth, has given an interview where he says that changing the constitution to allow for expropriation without compensation is not really necessary, because he said there's been far more progress on land reform targets than anyone has given credit for. And this is an interesting phenomenon that proponents of land reform or expropriation, let's not say land reform, and BEE, often they often seem to pretend as though there are no successes to point to in these programs. And yet, Trevor Manuel points out that according to the National Development Plan, which he was partially responsible for crafting, that apparently 76% of the land reform targets set in that plan have in fact already been achieved. According to some research from the University of Stellenbosch, 23.3 million hectares have been used for land reform, according to the in line with the National Development Plan's chapters. 4.86 million hectares have been redistributed via government programs to Black, Coloured, and Indian South Africans. 3.76 million have been redistributed by restitution. And yeah, so basically, the point here is that, as Manuel said, now, this is quite remarkable, because if you look at the kind of debates that the country lives through in respect of the amendments to Section 25 Constitution, you will not for a moment believe that we have advanced two-thirds of the way on where we want to be. And I think this is a very good point. Say what you will about the government's land reform program, and there are many problems with it, both conceptually and in practical application. But there's been a lot more movement here than land expropriation proponents suggest. Marius, what's the reason for that, do you think?
Well, I think if it came out that government land reform has actually been quite successful, they would take the push for expropriation without compensation out at the knees. So obviously you've got to say it's been slow, and you know, it's because of, not because of the government not doing things for us, because of, you know, these dastardly whites who are holding on to the ill-gotten gains from apartheid and colonialism. And you know, the only way we can, you know, make things right in South Africa is to have expropriation without compensation and so on. So if you have this kind of same story as when it comes to racism too, if we actually say, you know, racism is not the problem in South Africa, as the IRR does say, we're not saying it's not a problem, it's not the problem. But if you say it's, you know, not the major, if you've got to keep pushing, that's the major issue facing South Africans, then you can carry on pushing a lot of race-based laws. You know, you have race targets in various economic sectors, which is, you know, completely ridiculous. Not even the apartheid government used to do that kind of thing. And yeah, so I mean, I think this is just part of it. The none of the successes in land reform can be acknowledged, because otherwise, lots of the rationale behind EWC and RET and so on falls away. And it's good to see that we've seen two very senior ANC leaders come out recently. We've seen obviously, Trevor Manuel just mentioned, Thabo Mbeki also came out a little while ago and said that, you know, the amendment section 25 is a very bad idea. And that's Thabo Mbeki. He had his faults, but he does seem to be still trying to be in the kind of moral conscience of the ANC. I mean, we won't talk about AIDS in Zimbabwe, though, but when it comes to, I mean, Mbeki's also, he's always talking about, you know, says South Africa needs to be a non-racial country. We'll also forget about a lot of the race baiting that came under his presidency. But yeah, and Tito Mboweni, at best, I think he seems ambivalent to expropriation without compensation. So I think it's, yeah, I think it is quite positive that somebody like Trevor Manuel, who's quite well respected, I'm sure, within the ANC still and in South Africa, generally speaking, in international circles, has said this is a bad idea. And who knows, you know, there does seem to be a lot of pushback against EWC, not just from the usual suspects, from ourselves and AfriForum, the DA, but within people who hopefully have the ear of influential people that are still involved in the ANC, such as obviously the president and people sitting on the National Executive Committee.
So, Sarah, as Maurice just said, former president of the ANC and former finance minister from an ANC government, who while they ran the party and the country, we saw 5% economic growth, budget surpluses, expansion of services, that kind of thing, and the highest level of ANC electoral support in its history. Do you think that they will sway the ANC at all, considering that that's where they're coming from?
I doubt it. I think probably because the quality of the NEC and the cabinet and the presidency is way below in many respects what it was in his day. I think he's been trying to make quite a good point just by referring to the figures, when my answer would be, of course, who started the we need expropriation in order to progress land reform and all the evils that it represents? Cyril Ramaphosa. He was the first, and he's done it more than once. It's been picked up by other people, but it's a chimera. I mean, it's real nonsense. I think the problem is only the land reform, to the extent that Trevor Manuel reveals it, the biggest problem with the ANC was that it took too long to do it. In other words, we could have hit this point in our development where the applications for restitution or for obtaining land back could have been completed some years ago. And it was partly because of their, I don't know entirely, but it was a failure to appoint judges to land courts. It involved a whole lot of bureaucracy. There were all sorts of things. But notwithstanding that, you know, over two-thirds have now been resolved. So what Trevor Manuel, I assume, is saying is really that, guys, you're talking rubbish, but I'm going to put it to you this way. And the figures come out.
Exactly. No, it does seem like the real goals of the expropriation and BEE policy pushes are kind of revealed by the fact that these policies have been very aggressively pursued for some time, and yet it hasn't created the sort of nirvana that their proponents seem to suggest they will. It's as if, you know, it's as if, the way that BEE in particular is talked about, just to go off on a slight tangent here, it's as though we've never had it implemented before, and that if we just implemented a bit more, suddenly we're going to reach prosperity, racial parity, and glorious harmony.
Real BEE hasn't been tried yet, Nick.
Yeah, exactly. It's endlessly, real BEE has never been tried, despite the fact that it's been nothing but tried.
Yeah.
Maurice, any final thoughts?
I would just say for me that you know, it's one of those lovely untruths that at times Ramaphosa likes to really push and sounds sort of severe and determined about, and that is everything that this country doesn't need to grow.
Exactly. And I think that people who have who are interested in freedom and the protection of property rights and non-racialism should take heart the fact that our opponent's views are very much based on what is essentially a big lie, i.e. that land reform will uplift the people, especially as they've conceived it, and that BEE will reduce racial inequality. Morris, any final thoughts?
No, just to make a point that inequality in South Africa has gone down slightly according to Stats SA. But if we look at within race group inequality and the four race groups of South Africa, the only one where it's gone up is amongst Black South Africans, who are also incidentally the group with the highest inequality, which tells you that the benefits of BEE has not really trickled down particularly, and it's probably people who are insiders in inverted commas, people who already are fairly well educated, probably people who have links to the ANC or whatever the case is, or have managed to, you know, start businesses. So for the vast majority of Black South Africans, BEE has not helped them. And on another note, the whole focus on land reform is also barking up the wrong tree. Really, where South Africa needs to look to is its cities and its towns. Those are the real engines of economic growth. And we've seen how, you know, collapsing municipalities around the country, and it's not just the small places in, you know, it's not just Koffiefontein in the Free State or Schwarzenegger in the Northwest, it's Johannesburg and Gauteng now, which is also starting to suffer from this. And yeah, 2/3 of South Africans live in cities, that's not going to change. So this is actually where we're going to focus on, you know, urban regeneration and that. And the fact is, if the cities of South Africa, Joburg, Cape Town, Durban don't work, South Africa doesn't work, and we can give up on the place.
Oh, exactly right. All right, let us move on to our last story for today. And this is a bit of a wild and wacky one. And it is, of course, about legendary computer technology entrepreneur and infamous fugitive from justice, John McAfee, who appears to have passed away. So John McAfee, who I'm sure some people have come across before, either the name, because his antivirus software was very widely spread in use around the world. He also had a big social media presence, particularly on Twitter, where he was famous for putting up sort of weird videos and saying strange things. He's been found dead in a jail cell in Spain, just after a court had approved his extradition to the United States, where he was wanted for tax evasion. He was 75 years old, and the prison officials say it was apparently a suicide. He had been in jail in Spain since he was arrested at the Barcelona airport in October of 2020, just as he was about to board a flight to Istanbul. He's alleged to have deliberately failed to file tax returns between 2014 and 2018, despite earning millions from consulting work, cryptocurrencies, and selling the rights to his life story. He would have faced 30 years in prison if he was found convicted. He was convicted. He's an interesting character. He was a big proponent of cryptocurrencies. He ran as a libertarian candidate for president in the United States. He actually left the software industry, I think, in the late 90s when he had a falling out with his antivirus software company and had very little to do with them. He married a woman he met in Florida who apparently was a prostitute before he married her. He was also wanted by the police in Belize, who claimed that he killed his neighbor, or at least charged him with murdering his neighbor. And when police went to arrest him, they found him living with a 17-year-old girl and a large arsenal of weapons. He then fled the country. So, Maurice, your thoughts on the life of this strange character?
I don't think there's too much more to say about the guy. Obviously, he had, I think it's quite a tragic story. He obviously had some personal issues. I'm sure there were some mental health issues. And it seems he's quite a big fan of illegal drugs, which normally don't help people with mental health issues. I mean, I was just looking at some tweets from his Twitter feed, and he talks about things. I mean, I know this is a family show, but he talks about things like fisting and so on, which is all fine if it's, you know, with consenting adults, but it's not something you should be talking about on Twitter, I don't think. You know, so it's all, yeah, it's quite a... I feel a bit sorry for the guy, but there's something apparently what was posted on his Instagram 2 hours after his death had been announced was just a big capital letter Q, a black Q on a white background was posted onto his Instagram, which some people have said, and this is after McAfee had been confirmed as being dead. So some people have been saying this is some link to this QAnon conspiracy theory. So it's obviously, you know, like the internet's in a frenzy now talking about or like speculating what was meant by this, you know, was maybe McAfee was Q if this Q person actually exists. So yeah, it's all, I mean, it's quite something as you'd expect it from McAfee to, you know, even in death, he's got people talking about him or about his actions.
No, exactly. Sarah, I think you only learned about his life and story today. What do you kind of take away from this whole thing? A strange character, to say the least.
I think a bit of a maverick, very weird but funny, obviously very bright and probably very troubled. But what he does prove is that at the end of the day, when it comes to criminal charges, taxes, trump murder, they'll always get you on taxes. And you know, I had said that, you know, to be in the American penal system is no fun, although Marius probably corrected me and probably said he would probably have gone to one of these white-collar jails. But he was 75, and one doesn't know, maybe there were physical health problems involved as well. But he certainly, I mean, McAfee was, I think everyone subscribed to it at some point, you know, when he was still in charge. It was one of the first antivirus software programs that people used. So it has a sort of quasi-legendary status. And I think the thing about McAfee, from what I've read, is that there are not a lot of characters like him, and the world probably does become a little less colorful and a little less obscene as a result. But it's kind of sad anyway. They're just sort of reading between the lines, it's probably a rather sad end.
I just want to echo Osama's point that evading tax from the US government seems to be a bigger crime than murdering people. I think that's a conversation we have to have. I mean, I'm just thinking of the case of Ross Ulbricht, aka Dread Pirate Roberts, who ran the Silk Road website where you could buy drugs and so on from there. Of course, it was illegal. You could buy cocaine or heroin, whatever the case is. That guy's been sentenced to 2 life sentences plus 40 years without the possibility of parole. It's actually, it's terrible if you ask me.
Yeah.
Fully broke the law, but I mean, the guy's been locked up and thrown away the key. And, you know, apparently he was planning on murdering somebody, but he never murdered somebody. You know, he didn't rape anybody. And the guy now is in jail for the rest of his life for selling stuff to people who wanted, you know. He was basically taking part in the free market. And McAfee's a bit of a crazy guy, but I mean, he could have gone to jail for 30 years for, you know, not giving the US government their pound of flesh.
But that's the bitter end. I mean, not paying your taxes.
That is one of the strange things about the U.S. for those who don't know, is that if you're a citizen of the country, even if you don't live in the country, you still have to pay taxes, which is why he had these charges against him, despite the fact that he was, for the most part, not in the country. So I think what's quite interesting is that his own life story and his end kind of, those who follow him know that he was quite a radical libertarian of the sort of anarchic kind. And it was something he very much lived. And his point, he often in his critiques of the US government, he would say things like, you know, they only care about money. They're not really care about justice or all these kind of things. And the fact that at the end of the day, you know, Belize wasn't able to get a hold of him to make him go to trial for those murder charges. And yet the US government was able to get a hold of him to go for tax, just as you guys said. I think that really does say something, maybe that he wasn't quite as off the mark on some of his politics as perhaps he suggested.
I only have one sort of outstanding question, which I'm not sure anyone can answer just yet, and that is, who is going to play him in the movie?
Right. And I have no doubt that thought about doing that, because he had already sold in 2016 the rights to his life story to various people, and there was a book published about it. Anyway, strange character, fascinating character. And yeah, a very sort of 21st century eccentric. But anyway, yeah, tragic end, I think. Anyway, on that strange note, we will end the show for this week. So thank you very much. We will see you next week on Monday. We hope you enjoyed the show. Please comment, like, subscribe, rate, all those good things. And also, please support the IRR. SMS your name to 32823 and become a friend of the Institute. Thanks very much, and we'll see you next week. Cheers, everyone.